You're listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders at resourceindustrymedia.com.au.
Welcome to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media and Connecting Industry. I'm Kieran Moran. The Connecting Industry Podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resources construction sector throughout Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource and construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you can connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connecting Industry Podcast, we have Kian Brennan, CEO of Perth-based company Quantum Contract Solutions, who assists construction subcontractors avoid contractual landmines when it comes to contracts in the resource and construction sector. Kian was on what he calls the dark side, which is the client side of construction, for almost two decades. Over this time, he saw hundreds and hundreds of construction companies being bullied contractually, losing money and going out of business. In 2019, after becoming deeply concerned with the state of the industry and having inside knowledge of how the clients manage contractors, Kian started Quantum to help construction contractors.
Welcome, Kian, to the Connecting Industry Podcast.
How are you doing, Kieran? Are you well?
Yeah, not too bad. Another great day. Before we start on the business, I would actually like to get into a little bit about you and how you moved into the work that you do at this time. And so I can see from, of course, LinkedIn, we all stalk people on LinkedIn these days, but I can see that you're a quantity surveyor and over in Dublin as well. Tell us a little bit about how you moved into that, moved into the construction industry and so forth before we move into the business that you do.
Yep. Okay. So I was in construction basically from 12 or 13. My father had me on construction sites. You know, he knew a lot of builders. I don't know how he organized it, but was he paying them to give me a job or whatever it was, but he wanted me to work. And I worked as a laborer, you know, with my cousin specifically on building sites, sweeping up stuff, being a builder, a brickies tradie basically, or a brickies laborer beside him, like getting all the mortar ready for him. And then just generally doing odd jobs around construction sites. And getting paid peanuts for the pleasure. That was great. It really got myself and my cousin into, we used to do it every summer when we weren't in school. And it got us into kind of what hard work looked like from a very young age, which was great. And my grandfather was in construction as well. He had a construction company in Galway. And when he died, it said on the newspaper, the man who built Galway. So he built some of the main schools in Galway, some of the churches. There's a big water tower. So he was quite well known. I think he was head of the Contractors Federation in Ireland too. And so I always wanted to go into construction. I didn't really know how. And the advice that was given to me was to not be a contractor or a subcontractor. Mm-hmm. To go into client side, and almost the quantity surveying or the construction economics and management degree was kind of almost, you know, here's a good degree to get into construction, and from there you can kind of go anywhere, right? It's going to give you a good understanding of the costing side of construction. And that was advice that was given to me very early on, and definitely advice that I would pass on to people who are looking to do well in construction. Is really, if the closer you can get to the money in construction, from a job point of view, the higher paid you're going to be and the more influential you're going to be. So as a quantity surveyor, really you're in charge of cost, right? And so people will, you know, depending on what country you're in, and the terminology gets changed all the time. So if it's in Ireland and Australia, quantity surveyors, people know exactly what that means. In the US, it might be a commercial manager or a contracts administrator or whatever it happens to be. And so a good quantity surveyor understands drawings, right? So can interpret drawings to cost things up, but can also interpret contracts to say this clause in this contract is going to impact you this way, and understand the mechanisms of the contract and how the contract will play out in the post-award phase. That's what a good quantities of error contracts administrator, contract manager should be able to do. And it was that side that really interested me. I really enjoyed the contracts.
So, okay, so you moved into that. I just want to go back a little bit again there in relation to you saw your father and you saw your uncle and so forth working on building sites, had their own companies. Now, as you said, be closer to the money. So you chose correctly in that respect for yourself and been able to move forward. And as we get into the business and you help a lot of contractors to tier two contractors and so forth with contracts. But did you see anything, were you influenced at any time at a young age seeing maybe what your father said to you or your uncle said to you about watching those contractors being, moving into contracts, being ripped off for one, losing money, losing their businesses? Did anything influence you then at a young age?
I remember having discussions because, and I mean, this is a bit of a family thing, is that my dad always said to me, my dad actually didn't have anything. He was a chartered accountant, so he didn't have anything to do with construction, but he's very smart from a financial point of view. And he always told me from a young age, well, your granddad was very simple. He split his costings into 33% materials, 33% labor, 33% profit. If it didn't make those percentages, he just didn't do it, right? And that actually is sage advice, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think my father's older brother came in and he took over the company when my granddad died, and it didn't go well, and they went out of business. And so I knew that story from an early age, as in risk is very important. Going, construction. Now I know construction is managing risk and not taking over the top risks. Okay. So there's three really good books I read. There's a guy called Michael Masterson wrote a book called Ready, Fire, Aim. It's about growing businesses in general. There's another book called a guy by Keith Cunningham, which is The Road Less Stupid, and obviously Warren Buffett, right? So all of these three people say the same thing, that it's all about the downside risk. So most people will, and most businesses will always kind of grow up the way, right? Grow. But the difference between businesses that continue to grow and stay in business is the downsides. And so if you are a type of construction company that is always taking on risky contracts, there will be a moment in time where there's a downside, and it's that downside, how that impacts you. And if you're taking on risky contracts, the downside is huge and you don't recover. And then so the trajectory is gone. You've lost your upward trajectory, and that's the difference. Whereas the guys that are really concerned with their risks, companies that have been in business a long, long time, when the downside happens, it's just a blip and then they continue up, little blip, continue up. And that's the philosophy of all of these really intelligent people. And that's, for me, that's the way to go about doing it.
Yeah, it is. We'll get into it later, but to the point of where I've watched a lot of companies have exactly those problems, and hence the business you're in. Before we get there again, but okay, so senior claims consultant for another company, contracts engineers for another company as well. This is before you started your own business. So that's where you saw. So you say within your bio, in respect that you worked, you're on the dark side. What did you see on the dark side? What were some of the things that you did see that did move you into being able to help contractors now?
So there's a lot of perspectives are interesting, right? So, and it sometimes from the client side, the perspective of the contractors, they're always chancing their arm. They're always trying to get, blah, blah, blah. And the perspective from the contractor side to the client or the subcontractor is that, the client is just, will do me over, is intentionally trying to put me out of business or doesn't want to pay me. It's not really binary. It's not black or white, right? It's a continuum. Sometimes the truth lies somewhere in between there. It's not always the truth. And so really what I learned from the client side was that the contractors don't understand what happens internally, right? They don't understand that the contract is so important. No one doesn't want to pay you. If you're a contractor, you've done the work, and you've submitted documents and everything according to the contract, exactly as the contract says you have to do. Well, then internally, I can turn around and they don't understand that the person inside a client side has to take your document and present it to a contracts committee. If you're looking for a variation of some kind, right? So let's just say there's a variation or a change order or extension of time, and it's $500,000, right? So internally, they have a budget approved for this contract. So let's say you civil works, your contract value is 1.5 million. There might be a little buffer for variations or there might not be, right? And so you have to then turn around and go to the contracts committee and say, hey, all right, so we've asked them to do all this additional work. The original budget on what we have is this, and we need more money. And can you approve the more money? Can you approve the more money? Right. So that's what happens internally. And that's, you know, all those systems are in Oracle and in SAP potentially, or whatever the systems are, and it needs to be done in a specific way that needs to get the approvals all done. And so the contractor is just saying, oh, why can't you just approve it? Why can't you, like, what's going on? Why can't you just approve it? The thing is, if you submitted a bad document to me, and I have to turn around and present this bad document to this contracts committee, right? I'm going to look like an idiot because you haven't complied with the contract. So they're going to say, have they complied with the contract? No. Have they broken down the costs? No. Okay. Are you sure that this is the right cost? I guess not. Therefore, it's rejected. And so that's the actual process. So if you understand that that is the process that's happening behind the scenes, and you understand that the person that's going to have to deal with this is the guy that you're dealing with, it's, if you can give him documentation that is of a quality where he can turn around and present that straight away without even having to do anything himself, well, then it makes everything so much better. And that's the perspective shift that a lot of these contractors need to understand. So a lot of these guys will have project managers doing the contract stuff as a side hustle to their regular job. And so what does that lead? Bad documentation being submitted, not complying with the contract, because the project manager got a job to deliver. And so they don't do the paperwork properly, which means the variation doesn't get approved, which means your cash flow is in a bad situation. And there you go.
So of course you moved into Quantum Contract Solutions, so into your own business. So you saw a lot of that going on. You obviously did. What was one of the bad examples that, you know, maybe at the top of your mind back then? Because it's not easy for anyone to start their own business and get into it. You have to be inspired, basically, mm-hmm. to do it. It can take a lot of work to get there just to start, a lot of investment as well. And then you've got to, you know, to the point of being people to actually listen to you and get mm-hmm. your, you know, to get your value across and so forth to what you're trying to sell to them. And also to be able to help them. And that's, you know, the main reason why a lot of us are in business today, and it should be a great value, is to be able to help people. So what was the thing that really inspired you to go, all right, I'm going to start my own business here and start a company?
So it was, so I was 15 years working on the client side on various different projects. I think it got to the stage where I was like, my granddad wouldn't be happy with me doing this. Because there was just so many construction companies going out of business, like all the time, or losing money, or like the amount of conversations I had where they're like, I'm losing money on this project. I'm losing money. I can't blah, 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 you know? And I'm like, hey, like, here's what you need to do to get paid. Please just do this. Please give us this document. Please. Like, I'm almost begging them, please, like, help me out with your quality of your documentation. I need X, Y, and Z in there. If you don't, there's nothing I can do. And so it was just like over and over and over. Eventually there was a straw that broke the camel's back, you know, which is probably, sorry, there wasn't a straw that broke, it was just the amount of them is eventually like, I can't do this anymore. You know, I felt like I'm putting these guys out of business. And then, you know, and I have the ability to understand the insides of these companies to help them navigate what they need to do.
Is that a challenge? Because of course I've got to ask you, because if you might have noticed, I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile, and people might be going to it now in that respect, but looking at your LinkedIn profile and some of the companies that you have worked for before. So with you saying that, do you find it's a little bit of an offshoot? Do you find it at all challenging listing those companies that you used to work for if you perceive them as the dark side?
Well, people can just look at my LinkedIn, which is fine. But I did work for a consultancy as a director for a while, and I worked for lots of different companies within that consultancy. So they second you to a company to work in there as an expert. And so, yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter, because it's not a tight. I mean, there are tier one construction companies that are quite hostile, right? And a lot of this is intentional, but majority of companies are not. It's not that they have an intention to do this stuff. It's just that they're so big that they have a governance system in place that they need to go, hey, okay, well, let's just tick a box. Did they comply with the contract? No, rejected. And so it's not a feelings thing. It's not a relationship thing. There's a box to tick. Did they comply? They didn't. So it's rejected. Full stop. That's just it. It's just a system that's been developed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's as you were saying before earlier, in the process of how these companies work, and that's something that a lot of businesses do need to understand, that process and working with that system. And that's what you do. So, okay, you went on, you started Quantum Contract Solutions. Tell me about the business.
Okay, so what we do is we're a contracts administration solution for smart construction companies. And so if you were to look at the biggest and best construction companies in the world, they have teams of contracts people for a reason. And they understand that the returns are in the terms. This is where the money is made. You can be a great builder. You can do a great job and still not make a profit and still lose money because you haven't been on top of your contracts. That is factual. Okay. And I have examples that I can give you of that for sure. And so what we do is we specifically help construction subcontractors to navigate the insides of these companies to position themselves that they'll sign a lower risk contract that sets them up for success. They will have better cash flow by getting variations, change orders, EOTs approved, getting paid. And the thing about disputes is if you are in a dispute, it's not game over, but it's a race to see who loses the least amount of money. You're already in a you're in a negative. The example I can give you about that is, imagine, Kieran, you're at a traffic light and someone rear ends you. Okay. They get out of the car, right? This is the best case scenario in a dispute. They get out of the car, they come up to you and go, "Hi, Kieran, totally my fault. I'm really sorry." And you go, "Okay, all right. Let's just exchange details. Totally my fault." Okay. So they've admitted it's their fault, right? This is the best case scenario in the dispute. However, your car has still been banged up. You're not going to be able to sell it for as much money because you got to say, "Hey, I've crashed a car. It needs to be fixed. It mightn't be fixed perfectly." Once something is banged, like I know, for example, someone rear-ended us and our boot doesn't open automatically anymore, right? It's fixed, it's whatever, but like, because they fixed the panel, the boot doesn't open anymore, right? So you've had to pay to get yourself around as the car is being fixed. All of these little things are costs. So regardless of them taking full responsibility, getting your car fixed, everything done, you're still at a loss. That's what the dispute is. So the thing about disputes is, and your relationship is tarnished, right, with them. So the thing about disputes is you got to go before the dispute. You got to get the advice before it happens and avoid the dispute. That's the key. So that's essentially how we help construction companies. And, you know, I guess our pitch is you'll never pay for us, essentially, right? You like, if we're doing a good job, you just won't pay for us. We'll save you more money. We'll reduce your risk. And over the long term, you know, you're going to be in business a lot longer and be more profitable.
I'm interested to hear what your experience with the climate right now. And of course, we had COVID. A lot of supply chain issues. So earlier you were talking about, and you know, I know some companies had this, they would have quoted on a price and so forth. And over a period of 6 months or that year, they managed to win the tender for the project. And of course, everything went up and is still going up in some cases. For one, the supply chain issues of being able to get the product on time. So blows out the contract and the timing and so forth, and also blows out the cost. How are you assisting companies with that? Or what have you seen happen to some companies in that regard?
Yeah, so the companies that we that are on our books, this should be okay because we'll have negotiated an escalation clause into the contract. We'll have managed the delays appropriately. So that generally that's okay. There's a lot of companies coming to us in that problem now. And that is difficult because they've signed up to a lump sum contract or a fixed price contract, then they haven't been able to deliver, essentially. And so it is, and candidly, contractually, they are in the SH1T, right? Yeah. That is true. And their leverage is low, but that is not the end of the story. Right. There's still strategies where you can go to them. Right. Because the client, even though you're contractually in the wrong, the client still need to deliver. Ultimately, while they want to save money, they want the job done more. And so if you can have a discussion about how can we get the job done for you and for us to at least break even, when you have a discussion around that, then you can start having real discussions. And ultimately, that's kind of what you have to do. If you get into a dispute, you're not going to be in a good position because you're contractually not in a good position. But if you can have open conversations to say, okay, look, we both know that the market's crazy. We haven't been able to get equipment. It's a different environment. And if we're making a loss. And if we can't complete the project, you're going to go and have to hire someone else in. And guess what? Their prices are going to be substantially higher because they're going to take into account the increase in prices and put their margin on top, right? So as a company, you're ultimately going to have to pay more anyway. So if you can give us a little bit of extra money, we're on the job here, we want to do the work, right? If you can give us a bit of extra money so we can handle just that increase in price, just so we can break even, then we're going to be able to deliver the project for you, et cetera. So if you can have a conversation like that, it is a bit like cap in hand, but you're talking sense. And they're like, okay, well, and so internally they say, hey, these guys are, you know, borderline going out of business or not going to make money. It's going to mean that we're not going to be able to deliver the project. And so what do we do? Okay. And then, so imagine that conversation back to contracts committee. So he's gone to contracts committee and he's now saying this argument to them. And they're like, okay, well, we need this work done. So let's do it. So you're preparing him for going to the contracts committee internally so he can have a great conversation. So that's what you're doing.
And okay, then. So a lot of companies get in. So your tier ones, they put out the tender and so forth for a number of work that needs to be done on the project. And so a number of companies, they do put their tenders in. A lot of people want to provide a service. They want to provide a quality service. They want to make sure that what they're building and so forth is good. They've done what they said they're going to do and everything. But we seem to have also a lot of experience with companies that they undercut each other in relation to the tenders and so forth to get that job. Mm-hmm. So just in the question of really the tier ones with what they're looking for, some are looking for, of course, you know, oh, it's cheaper, let's get it. And government have an issue with that one as well. Mm-hmm. What sort of advice can you sort of give there in relation to that? Because, you know, I know some people that don't even bother in the end because they know where it's going to go. And they don't even bother wasting time because, you know, it takes a lot of work to be able to do a tender and so forth. And it takes a lot of hours and some of small companies as well. But to the point of what would your advice be to look out for with companies that are just, you know, the companies that are looking for quality more and quality project work. And then, of course, the companies that just want to, well, can you get the job done for the good price?
Okay, yeah. So there's a game happening. Mm. And you got to play the game. And this is where the contracts come in, right? So I'll tell you, the biggest and best companies in the world, right? So if we're talking, I mean, let's just talk about a John Holland, a CPB, a Turner in the States, in Ireland, like a Sisk, if they still exist, I'm not sure, right? But these big tier one companies, what they have teams of contracts people, as I say, for a reason, because they know that that's where the money is. And so their strategy, and I'm sure you've heard of this, is they'll win a bid at a loss, but they know that they can make up the variations in the post-award phase. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's no reason that other companies can't play that game too. So that's one option is, okay, well, if I know that that's the game, Well, I'm going to play the game and I'm going to tee myself up to be contractual in post-award. Like, for example, Downer in Australia. Downer, absolutely on the nose with contractual. And people don't think of them as, oh, no, they're difficult to deal with. People think about Downer, they're contractually astute. They're really good at what they do. And people respect them for it. Okay, so that's a mindset shift. You can be contractual from the outset. People will go, they're really professional. They know what they're doing. And that's how people view you, like a Downer. So do that, essentially. Okay, so that's one thing. The second thing is there's what's called a virtuous cycle and a vicious cycle, right? So the virtuous cycle is, the vicious cycle is you go onto these projects and let's say you haven't got that ability to make up the your margin in the post-award phase. You go in and you bid lowest, right? And then you go in to do the job. Well, because you've bid lowest, your margin is the smallest. You probably have the worst people. You probably have the worst equipment. And your margin isn't big enough that the next time you go around, it's probably going to be worse. You're probably not going to be able to afford to get better people, better equipment. So a higher margin you spiral down the way because your reputation gets worse because you've got bad equipment, you've got bad people, and eventually you go out, you have bad reputation and you can no longer compete even on price because it goes down. The other side is if you have a strong margin is that you can basically, you get the best people, you can deliver the best work, and then you get this reputation of, yes, they're more expensive, but they are really switched on contractually. They're going to be able to do the work. They're like their accounts. And so when they look at you, they go, well, these guys are definitely going to be able to do the work. And so when you have that reputation, it's people go in times when times are bad, people like now, all right, people go, okay, well, they're definitely not the cheapest, but we know that they're going to complete the work. And with so many construction companies going out of business, that's the most important thing for us. So when you have that reputation in a down cycle like we're in now, you're going to do really well. In fact, you're probably going to clean up because you're just going to take all the work off everybody else because of that great reputation that you have. So how do you do that? How do you get yourself into that situation? So obviously, if you are able to, you know, do the first strategy that I said, that's great. But if you have other acquisition channels other than bidding, if you have an acquisition channel where you are working on repeated and referred work, if you have framework agreements in place, if you are winning work via relationships and different avenues that is not just bidding, that you're being sole sourced to, we want to go to this company because they are definitely going to be able to deliver the work. Those type of different avenues is going to allow you to not just rely on bidding and tendering to get work. And then those ones, you're going to be able to price more, price better. And that's really having just one acquisition channel where it's just bidding. That's a recipe for disaster.
So, okay, we're just at the end, getting towards the end of the Connecting Industry podcast. Final word, basically, what's the advice that you can give to a lot of the tier two contractors? A number of them do listen to this podcast throughout central Queensland and Queensland, but also throughout Australia as well. So the one bit of advice of the companies that are starting to move into their contracts within some of these tier one companies.
All of the guys that are listening to this, right, are probably, maybe there are architects and engineers. Maybe there are, right? Most people are not. Most people are business owners. Most people own companies, that sort of thing, right? But here's my challenge, right? Is you are not an architect or an engineer. However, you can look at a drawing, a construction drawing that has been drafted by an architect or an engineer, and you can understand it perfectly. You can interpret that drawing absolutely perfectly, right? Now, a lawyer drafts a contract. You need to be able to understand the contract as well as you can understand the drawing. That is the game. It's just another document that you need to be able to interpret. And so construction is not about just building. The business of construction is not about building. It's about building and the contract, right? To get paid for it. So if you can learn how to interpret the contract, then you can do really well. If you just don't do that sort of work, right, you're essentially risking everything, right? It's like the opposite that applies. If you only know how to interpret a contract, but you have no idea how to interpret a drawing, you know, you're going to be at a loss as well because you can't deliver on the work. Okay, so they're equally as important. So if you don't have that skill set to understand what's in the contract, you need to get it. You need to understand it because it is part of construction. It is the game of construction, and the game is being played whether you're playing actively or not.
Well, thank you very much, Kian, for joining us today on the Connected Industry podcast. How can people get in contact with you and Quantum Contract Solutions?
Yeah, so we've got a few different ways. So the best thing is we got a podcast ourselves called Construction Secrets. But essentially, all I do is I break down problems, commercial problems that have happened on construction projects, and walk you through. So just by listening to all of those podcasts, you'll get contractually savvy yourself. Okay, so that's a good way to just do it. We've got a website called constructionsecrets.io where you can go on, and there's free training there as well. So that's everything that's free. Right, you can do all of this stuff yourself. If you want us to do it for you, go to quantumcontractsolutions.com and we can help you out.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us.
No worries, Kieran. Great to chat.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry podcast interview series with Kieran Moran from Resource Industry Media. To find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to resourceindustrymedia.com.au.